So as previously announced, this is a class on how to give a class, on how to not be afraid to give a class, and the different kinds of classes that we can give. Because class doesn't only mean in a public forum like this. So I think it was Srila Gurudev's arrangement that he was playing with his dear daughter, Krishna Priya Devi, and asking her to do something that in another circumstance she would have been easily able to do, which is to answer what is anukulyena means. Because I've seen her in India and all over the world for at least 6 or 7 or more years. But in the shock of it all, she couldn't think of what to say, as we all are, especially in front of Gurudev, because that's always the greatest. Even if we have prepared something to say in front of him, it's hard. So I'm not going to have any order. I just hope that in a bunch of things that I say, something might be helpful. And you can also ask questions, and that might also direct me. And you can feel free to interrupt and ask a question right in the middle, like, but, or how about, well, that sounds nice, but actually. So one aspect of giving class is remembering what to say. And remembering comes from having known something in the first place and then remembering it. So in order to remember something, I have to first learn it. So just a couple of tips of learning, which when I was as young as the youngest of you, I used to do all the time. That is, in the 70s, during Srila Prabhupada's manifest day. Number one, whenever I would be reading something, Krishna book or Bhagavatam or anything, and if any devotee would pass by, I can't say that I did this always, because then that's all I'd be doing, but very, very often, when I was reading, if a devotee passed by that I knew, I would say, oh, so-and-so, can I share something with you, or you want to hear something interesting? And then I just read something, because they got me in the middle of reading something. And then I would say what I just read, so it's fresh. And then when it's fresh, and then you repeat it, it has a much, much greater opportunity and tendency to be remembered than when I'm just reading and thinking, I'm going to remember this. 99% of the time I don't. So repeating helps a lot. And then when I repeat it, because I'm thinking as I'm reading it, I'm going to remember this. And then when I say, oh Radha, listen to this, I have something great to tell you. Or did you hear that? And then I say what I read, then I realize what I actually remember and what I don't. And that's great, because then I'll look at it again, and especially I'll look for the missing parts. And then when the next person passes by, then I'll say, Tara Lakshmi, I have to tell you something really great. You promise you won't tell anybody? And that makes everybody interested. So in that way, I get to remember more and more the pieces that I've forgotten. I started giving classes in ISKCON when I was 19 years old. That's when I joined. And the reason is because there were maybe 10 or 15 or 20 of us. And nobody thought at that time that ladies shouldn't give classes. That came later. So we would all take turns. And later on, actually, about a year later, when Brahmachari wrote to Gurudev and said that aren't women less intelligent and why should they give classes? But it took a while for that to happen. In the meantime, I got pretty trained up in it. And Prabhupada replied to that Brahmachari, quoting the verse, Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi Sudra Kenyanai, Jay Krishna Tatvaveta Se Guru Hoy. Whether someone is a Sudra or a Brahmin or any particular designation, if they know the science of Krishna, then they can be a teacher. Of course, obviously, you know, we're talking about pure devotees there, but Prabhupada was applying it even in our fallen condition stage, and even when we didn't know the science of Krishna, but just knew a little teeny bit because we were brand new. But still, Prabhupada was using that verse to nullify any objections to any particular kind of person giving a class. Another thing, the first thing to remember is that you can do it under any circumstances. There's never no time. There's never not time. There's always time. For example, when I was your age, I used to iron my saris. So I would put the Bhagavad Gita, or whatever I wanted to learn, on one end of the ironing board, and then I would say my first line, Najayate Mriyate Va Kadachin. That's the third one. And then go down my ironing board, saying it as many times as I could fit in to that end, yeah, and back to the original end. And then I would say the next line of the verse, Najayate Mriyate Va Kadachin, Mahanyate Hanyamane Sariri. Now, excuse my accent. That verse, I haven't said what I just said now, I haven't said it in years, literally. But I used to say it so much that even years later I can recall it. Just like, you know, when you watch TV and there's commercials. So when I was a little kid, I used to watch TV and TV commercials. And that was about 50 years ago. So I can still remember the jingles, and I can still remember the rhymes that we did in kids' school. Not that I make a practice of saying it and practicing it, but because it was so much embedded in me, like every 15 minutes of every day, the TV would have the same commercial. I'm not going to embarrass myself by singing any of them. Just take my word for it. So, repetition. Repetition to myself, just saying it to myself, being able to fight my mind that really is too lazy to say anything Krishna conscious or remember anything. As Krishna says, from whatever and wherever the mind may wander due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. In this case, the self is the job at hand, which is remembering, say, verses. So, the first thing is the desire. And that desire fights off any arguments or excuses of the mind. We know that desire does that. So, then I would repeat the verse to myself, no matter what I was doing. Because I was always very busy in doing one thing or another, either painting or doing book distribution or joining in the daily maha cleanup or ironing or whatever. So whatever I was doing, even if I was cleaning a wall during our maha cleanup time, I would have the book on a table and I'd go to the wall and learn. That's exactly where I learned Bandehang Sri Guru Sri Jitapa to come on. And then I'd go back to the table, get the next part, go back to the wall, and it was so much fun. Because my mind is quite a demon, and it was even a worse demon in those days. So, but when I was learning verses, then I wasn't there. I wasn't in crummy Brooklyn or Los Angeles or anywhere. But I felt like I was where the book was. When I would go to the ISKCON Press, before it was called BBT, it was called ISKCON Press. And the ISKCON Press building was maybe three or four blocks from the Brooklyn temple. So every day, about two or three times a day, I would go back and forth. After the morning program, then after lunch prasadam, and like that, back and forth. And there were small streets, not big highway streets. So I would learn verses. I would learn the verses of the first canto, first chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam. Janma Jisayaton Vayaritas Chatesu Vigyan Sura, and the English. Mostly the English I would do while walking. It's a little easier. And I just felt, I know I wasn't, but in my neophyte way, I felt that I was right there in Naimasharanya with the sages. Once in a sacred place, the sages of Naimasharanya gathered together to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu, something about him not blinking his eyes. And then they asked Suta Goswami, oh, you who are blessed with old age, but he wasn't, he was very young, but he was old because he was old in knowledge. So I just, it was so thrilling. My life was a mess, and I was always into who do I hate, who do I like, who hates me, who likes me, and why do they have to say that? You know, the whole blah blah that everybody goes through. But when I was doing that, and then later on just remembering in my mind, I felt so free and so connected with all these great sages. And then when the devotees would, the ladies would take prasadam together and the men would take prasadam together. And whatever I would just read, like I was reading about King Paranjana, because we had to read Prabhupada's pre-published manuscripts in order to pick out the pictures. And it was thrilling enough to read it, but then to make it more thrilling, I had to keep it in my mind because I would repeat it to the ladies as they were taking prasadam. And I was always looking for an opportunity to read and repeat and remember. So when the devotees would take breakfast prasadam, so many of them were book distributors. So I would read the portions of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that where they could apply Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes with their activities of going out and preaching. So the first thing is desire. That desire forces us to look for all opportunities. And then not being afraid to mess up. The desire also controls us so that we're not afraid to mess up. Like, for example, in Australia, Srila Gurudev gave a whole series of talks on Guru Tattva. And the base verse of that course was by Dvitiya Vinibeshitasya Ishadapetasya Viparjayosmiti Tanmaya Tam Buddhirabhajetvam Bhaktyaika Jaisam Gurudevatatma. Now, I didn't prepare that I was going to say that verse to you, but it came out freely because I said it so many times, at least 50, 60 times. And my first few times were not successes. But I didn't mind being embarrassed to say it and mess up, even in front of other devotees. So I messed up the first time, I halfway messed up the second time, quarter messed up the third time, and then by the fourth time I got it, and then I was going. It's like the accelerator. That's it. The accelerator, and then you go, and then you just go, and then you're going. So, those are a few different suggestions. Now, I used to have a student named Abhiram who used to fail miserably because he never could give me the word-for-word meaning and sometimes couldn't give me the translation. Because every time I saw him, I would ask him for a verse because he said he needed help in learning verses. So I said, okay, I'll ask you all the time, every time I see you. So then I asked him, and first he couldn't give me the translations, then he couldn't give me the word-for-word meaning, and then I just told him he was a miserable failure, he graded 25 or 0 or whatever. But each time he got better, and then he could even explain it, because sometimes you can give a, like Gurudev would call on the Gurukulis to say the verse, and they would say the translation too, but then when he asked them to explain it, they might not have been able to explain it. So then he had to explain it in his own words. So now I'm going to call on him and ask him to say one of his verses and the word-for-word meanings and the translation and a couple of sentences of explanation on this extra mic.
Any verse.
Guru Gusti Gustalesu Sujani Pusuragane Swamantre Sri Namni Bradanava Yubitanda Sharane Sadhadam Bhaktva Kururatim Purva Matitara Mai Santa Bratas Chaturdi Abhiyachi Tritapara.
O mind, I'm humbly praying to you with sweet words. Please give up all pride and develop incessant rati for the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev, for the holy Dham, for the residents of the holy Dham, for the Brahmanas, for the Vaishnavas, for your Diksha Mantras, for the holy name of the Supreme Lord and the shelter of the lotus feet of Kishore Kishori Sri Sri Radha Krishna Yugala Kishore. So this is a verse of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami's Sri Manashiksha, where he is praying to his own mind, which is explained in, as our best friend or our worst enemy. So the meaning of this verse is to develop apurva rati, or unprecedented attachment, also described by Srila Gurudev as atma rati, or the innate attraction of the soul for its object of worship, which is Sri Sri Radha Krishna. And it begins by the instruction to develop this rati for Guru. That is, Guru Goste, Gostalesu, for Guru and also for Goste, for the holy Dham, the place of Gurudev's lotus feet have walked and where the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna have been enacted. And so these instructions are for the mind, that the mind can become attracted to anything, any object in this world, but especially to develop attraction to these things will help one to make advancement. And he is praying to his mind as if it's his own friend. He's saying, mind, you are my friend, my dear brother. I'm asking and requesting you, just develop attraction for these things. I understand.
Thank you. Did you ever do that before? Did you ever have to get up and do that? You never did it.
Wow, very good.
But because you practice so much, and it became natural. Did you ever talk to friends and say, can I tell you my verse?
Yes.
That's why. Because he did it one-on-one so much, and his friends helped him just by lending an ear, so he was able to get up in front of 40 people. Great, thank you. You may say, well, I never had the opportunity to give classes. So where am I going to practice? Of course, we see that Abhiram Prabhu practiced just one-on-one, or maybe he had two friends that were listening. Besides that, and in that way, even if you're doing one-on-one, and even if you're speaking just to three or four people, you can sound very authoritative. See, he quoted some, this word means this, and this word means that. And he didn't tell where the verse came from, but that would have been good also. He did say Manushiksha Raghunathas Goswami?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, verse 1?
No.
Okay.
No, he
did say. Well, he got pretty good. Yeah. He was pretty good, 99. So, you sound very authoritative, and then the person automatically picks up to hear. I remember that Gopavinda Prabhu, whenever he was preaching one-on-one to anybody, he would always quote verses and their meanings and sometimes word for word. And people just felt obliged because you're bringing a power that's outside of yourself, and the people become surrendered to that power. Now, so you may say, well, I'm not giving classes. How many of you get to give classes, you might say? You give class, Gurudev calls on you, or you travel around the world and you give classes. But I don't have that opportunity. So I have to say, and excuse me for using the continually bad examples in my own life, but that's what I know the best. When I was 19, 20 years old, I was so excited hearing Srila Prabhupada's Hari Katha that, I mean, we wanted to jump out in the middle of the class. We had to constrain ourselves and just tell everybody, wow, you have to meet my guru, you have to hear this. Did you know that there are, because we thought before we met Prabhupada that there's only 9 planets and this is the only inhabited one, that there are innumerable universes and Krishna's traveling in all of them, and just we're not this body, and all the fabulous stories about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami. So we just figured out, venues for preaching. We would call up schools and, you know, act like we knew something, and we're going around to different schools. And even when I was 21 years old, I spoke at Harvard University. Just because we had that pioneer spirit. We never considered, as a perverted reflection of Raghunatha Bhakti, we never considered it whether we were qualified or not for it, for preaching. We just thought, wow, this is great, and I want to share it, and I want to bring everybody to my Gurudev. Whether I knew anything, whether I was lusting, angry, greedy, lusty, musty, fusty, rusty, or anything, never came into our minds. And in that way, our life became very exciting. I know that, you know, looking around, I see that many of the devotees here are in lone pockets. Like now we're all together, but most of us are in lone pockets in some corner of the world. So we can create, as we did so many years ago, we can create our own association by preaching. So anyway, so Prabhupada sent us to different cities to start temples, and then we were also in our own lone pocket. But we knew, why am I here? I'm here because I have to spread the glories of my Gurudev and share what he gave me. So with all of my disqualifications, I used to call up radio stations, like in Boston, when we were starting our temple there. Radio stations, TV. We would go to schools. We means sometimes one person alone. Wow. Go to schools and make classes, arrange for classes, or universities, high schools, and also start clubs. And you need to start a club in a school, you need to have the person who's already a student. So we make friends, give out Prabhupada's Back to Godhead magazines or any books or booklets that he published, and make friends and get just one student to sign his name. And then with that club, we could have tables on the campus, we could give classes, and we're just accepted there. We could go on the college's radio. I don't remember the names. It could be yoga or bhakti yoga or...
UC Berkeley has a bhakti yoga club.
Bhakti yoga seems like the normal thing it would be. And yoga, everybody was interested in yoga. Mm-hmm. But any name that... You could talk about it with even the students or just any modern people.
But what would you tell, like, because I know nowadays in school they have this thing where you're not supposed to have certain religious institutes in schools. To be clever, they have to be like, you have to be really sneaky about it. So what would you say about?
It could be the Institute of Vedic Study. It could be ancient Indian thought on modern life. There's many, many ways. Just like in distributing books. by contact with the people, Krishna gives all kinds of things that you didn't imagine that could have come to your mind. So, like when distributing a book, this helps you to be happy within no matter what's happening outside. You know, that devotees develop that quote-unquote line. So many ideas come. You say one thing and the person doesn't respond to it. In speaking with students, just by talking with them back and forth, they'll help you think of things. And then they're automatically, instantly engaged in your Gurudev's service because they're helping you. You can engage anybody in anything and they get so much Sukritis. So then under those names, you can start something. Does that answer the question? And then so many other students will come, and then you could also hold programs in people's houses, because people sometimes are afraid to come to temples. So then you make friends in the school, and you say, could we do some bhakti yoga or Vedic studies, ancient Vedic studies, in your home. We give classes, or I could just meet with some of your friends. If you don't want to sound, to make them afraid by calling me to class, and say that I go around and casually discuss and share. And I was in India, and I learned so many things about how to apply Indian, ancient Indian yoga meditations, even at work. So me and my friends share that. However, what's the word, formal or informal, you want or need to be under a certain circumstance. And also, I remember when I was, how old were you? That's pretty young, I wasn't that young. Because I met Prabhupada when I was 19. But in my early 20s, we would go to people's houses and bring prasadam. And as I said, even speak at schools. Or you can invite, you make the venue, and then you could ask some more senior devotee. You don't have to wait for the big shot sannyasins to come. Just any senior devotee. Because we were all so junior in Prabhupada's time, but we had to be the seniors. So they could give the class, and then after the class, there's distribution of prasadam, and you talk to people one-on-one. But you can, and that will prepare you for the next time you do it. It's a matter of forcefully putting ourselves in situations where I'm forced to speak. When I was giving classes in the early 70s, my mind generally goes all over the place. And I'm distracted if I'm reading to what conversation is going on. But when I had to give a class, I could be in a room full of people and not be aware that I'm there. Because I knew whatever comes in has to go out in the next hour. So I don't know if you ever had these hatha yoga classes where they would do the sarvasana, where you just lie down and then they tell you, okay, think of all the sounds in the room. Can you do that for a minute? There's the saw, there's the baby, there's me. It's kind of a buzzing sound. And then they tell you, okay, now cut out all sounds but one. And then you consciously think of just that one sound. So where there's a will, there's a way. So if I want, I can solely and wholly concentrate. Especially in an emergency. Anything's possible in an emergency. So the emergency is, I've arranged that I have to give class, and so I have to be able to say something. So by repeatedly saying, then it becomes natural. And it just comes out naturally. It may be boring to you because you've said it a million times, but it will be exciting to the person who's just hearing it. And he may be overwhelmed.
It brings confidence.
It brings confidence, especially especially when you see the person's response and reaction, that their life is actually changing and they've just realized that they've been going in the wrong direction. Also, I took the opportunity to learn verses. And when I say I don't only mean me, but I mean my contemporaries. And then also the devotees now do similar things. But I can speak from experience so it comes out natural. That I took the opportunity to learn verses when I was on book distribution. And I learned a lot of things on book distribution, book-wise. Sometimes if I had to go from one place to another, like there was a crowd here, and then it died down, and then there was another crowd like a block away. So as I was going from one block to the other, I would learn a verse from Isa Upanishad. The Supreme Lord is perfect and complete. Although he's completely perfect, because he's completely perfect, so many complete units emanate from him. And each unit is completely equipped as a complete whole. Because he's so perfect, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Like, I would learn the verse, even in the Sanskrit, if it was a simple verse. Then when I get to the person, in the middle of talking to them, I would practice my verse on them. Like one can live for hundreds of millions of years if he knows how to live. That is, if he accepts whatever's coming to him naturally by the will of the Lord and doesn't assume ownership of other things, knowing well to whom everything belongs. But the thing is, you can use your own language. Remembering the verse, but then saying it in your own language. So I learned verses that way. And also how to explain the verse because, you know, Mr. John Doe isn't going to be able to appreciate that the Lord is pure and prophylactic from the eighth verse of Isa Upanishad. So then I would immediately have to speak the words that he could totally relate to in his life, but I'm thinking of the verse. So that gave me practice in explaining a verse. And then another way I learned things and got practice on book distribution is that I would say, for example, I'd say my line, like whatever the line was, you from LA or out of town, well great, you get one then, whether they're from or not. Because I'm supposed to give this to the 50 nicest people in LA today. And as I'm speaking, I would give them the book and then say the couple of lines. Let's say it makes you happy within and know what's happening outside, for example. And then I would just, and this is like building muscles. So, for example, and then I would just read anything. I didn't know what it was going to be. And then I'd read it and then I would practice explaining it in their, how I understood for their terms and their life. So that was very building. And then another one is, so what do you do? Yeah. And whatever they say, well, that's exactly what this book is about.
Oh my God.
Well, I'm a truck driver. That's exactly what this book is about. Because like when you ride trucks, you have a lot of time to think. And in this book, it says that the mind is the best friend. You know it better than anybody because you drive a truck, right? That the mind can be the best friend and the worst enemy of the soul. Because we're not the body, just like you're not your shirt, right? The simile, this a you that's underneath this body that you won't believe it, but that's millions of times more brilliant and powerful than the sun. So this book is about the real you. So anyway, back to the truck driver. So you think a lot, and you look like a thinker. So this book teaches that, what is it? Well, how do you start that verse? One must control the mind. How do you start it? Not Vajravikam. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The one that says the mind is the best friend of the conditioned soul and the greatest enemy as well. Well, I forget the beginning, but one must control the mind. One must bring the mind under control because it's the greatest friend and the worst enemy. So this book teaches how you can make your mind your friend and not your enemy. How to, one must elevate himself by his own mind and not degrade himself, because the mind is the best friend and the greatest enemy as well. So then you can just apply it in any way.
What about engineering?
Engineering. What kind of engineer are you?
I don't know. I get a lot of people who say, I'm an engineer, studying engineering.
Well, I would ask, that's very interesting, what kind? Because there's so many kinds of engineering. There's the sanitation department and...
Computer engineering.
That's what you say. Well, that's great. Now, I never did this before. I'm doing this on the spot, so wish me the best. That's exactly what this is about. You know how you have folders in computers, and then you push the button and the folder opens and so many wonderful things that you need to read about come out? Well, in your heart, and you look like you have a very beautiful heart, in your heart, beyond time and space, are so many fabulous worlds, a beautiful spiritual world that's within you, which is full of knowledge, never ending, without any beginning, ever new at every moment. And this book teaches you how to tap that. Or like that. And you can expand on that. So what do you're a mathematician. Well, great. That's exactly what this book is about. On the... You know, normal math is 1 plus 1 equals 2, and 1 minus 1 equals 0. But actually, this book will teach you how to be the greatest mathematician by connecting with the greatest mathematician. You believe in God, right? Because so many infinite, you see how brilliant everything is, how brilliant everything is constructed. Like if the sun were to deviate from its course, just one iota, the whole universe would burn. If the sun would deviate from its course the other way, the whole universe would freeze. So there's a great mind calculating behind that. So this book teaches you how to connect with that greatest mathematician, hey, the greatest engineer. So many planets come from him, so many trees, so many people, and still he's whole, and he's ever expanding. So this teaches you how to connect with that greatest mathematician, so you come out a genius in your class. And guess what? There's no cost for the book. Everyone's just giving a donation, because we're helping people off birth, old age, disease, and death.
So what do you do if you say you believe in God, right, and they say no? Atheistic.
Well, that's great. That's just what this book is about. I did that. I had one of those.
What did you say? Did they take the book?
I forgot what I said at the time, but he did take the book. Because somehow Krishna gives inspiration, but that atheist did take the book. I might have asked a further question to him and then been able to apply it. Or to find out what, if God didn't give you the intelligence to say that, then what is the source or origin of everything? All the options are here.
Oh, the options.
And how you can connect with your own self. If you think that you're God, somebody has to be the supreme enjoyer. If that's you, then this book gets you into your original, all-powerful self. I mean, for an atheist, you know, you can...
You have to have all the options. It's preaching. They think it's your religion, so...
I'm sorry?
They think it's your religion, so they're like, how is it, if it's a religion, then how does it have all the options? But it's bias.
Are you being somebody?
Yeah. I'm asking a question, like, how... If this is it's biased to one opinion. How does it give all the options? Does it accept Christ? Does it accept Judaism? Does it accept all the other religions? How is it unbiased?
Well, just like you have high school courses, and then you have or university courses, and then you have the post-graduation course. So this is not a religion. It's not Judaism. It's not Hindu. This is fact. It's not Hinduism. It's not any sectarian religion. But it's the postgraduate study of all religions, what brings all religions together. And it's the common denominator of all religions, so that all religions can live in love and harmony. Which religion is it that the soul is transmigrating from childhood to youth to old age, and then it dies, and then it has to again take another body? This is a science. 2 + 2 = 4 is a science. It never equals 5. So this is the science of the soul, and it includes all religions, and it adds that extra denominator of the postgraduate study. It's called Sanatana Dharma, or the Dharma. Dharma means that which can't be separated from an object. Like what makes, what is the Dharma of water? Wetness. What is the Dharma of fire? Heat. So there's a, what makes us what we are and that can't be separated from us, our original essence that's now covered by all kinds of problems, all kinds of imaginations, all kinds of cloudy thinking. To get to that real essence of us where we can be happy by experiencing our real self, which is more powerful than the sun and moon, that is called Sanatana Dharma, and that's what this book deals with. Sanatana means eternal, and that means it has no beginning and no end, and at every moment forever, it gets newer and newer instead of older and older.
Does it come from, and how do you
feel? What airplane are you flying? United. Okay, well, that's exactly what this book is about. You know, fly the friendly skies of United, above the clouds. Well, now, because of all of our circumstances, we're in the clouds of forgetfulness of our real self and our relationship with the Supreme or the Absolute or the source of all existence. So this book flies you. And then when I would say that, sometimes I would go, it flies you, and I would start. Well, if they say it's too heavy, it's so light, it will carry you.
What is it? Well, where does it come from, and how do you know it's real? I get that.
All these answers come by practice. And suppose I want to know. I don't know how it's real. Okay, let me go buy a folio over at Radha's table over there. And then I see all the Prabhupada's books. And then I ask all my questions, real, illusory, and I press my button and everything comes up from Prabhupada's books. And it is even, I go on Pure Bhakti, and Gurudev's 500 or so lectures that have been published, I can do a Google search on that. How do I know this is real? How do you know if you're satisfied, if you're full when you've eaten? Does anybody have to ask you, does anybody have to give you a certificate that now I'm full, now I'm satisfied? You know it. So you experience by your own self-realization that this is real. Also, how do you know that something's a good school or that something's a reliable bank? So many reputable people are giving it its stamp of approval. So there are so many great sages and saints, and you can tell them about those great sages and saints, like Vyasadeva, like Narada. And so everyone has to put their faith somewhere according to the good repute of the person that I have to have faith in. So we put our faith here. There's so many answers that can come like a flood by practice. By forcing myself to be in a certain circumstance where I'm forced to speak, where I'm forced to remember. And it starts with desire.
Mm-hmm. person is not receptive, like, because it says you shouldn't preach to the faithless, and so when do you know when someone's faithless and you shouldn't waste your time?
One way is to pray constantly. You mean this is if you're distributing books or you're just speaking to somebody?
If you're distributing books, you're going door to door in people in your school that are atheistic or they have a closed mentality.
Sometimes you can tell by, well, just like a doctor. After a doctor has treated many, many thousands of patients over the last 10 years, he can just look at somebody's face and see a lot of what's wrong. So by lots and lots of preaching, you can get the intuitive powers to know. And the main way to know is if we have mercy. Mercy. That is, we can pray that please don't, it's not my time, I'm yours, Gurudev. I'm yours, Prabhupada. I don't want to wait my time, I have no time. It's all your time. And so please don't let me waste your time. Please direct me to who to speak to and direct me what to say. Just like when the acharyas, and we're just following the examples without any, we're just going through the motions now, but when the real devotees say their, what do you call that, invocations or prayers before giving class, or as I quoted last night, before Srila Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote his commentary, he prayed for mercy. That unless the gopis give mercy, I'm not going to be able to understand anything, then how can I explain anything? Srila Sukadeva Goswami, when he was asked a question by King Parikit, he spent an entire chapter reciting prayers to the Lord, and at the end of each prayer, you know, glorifying the Lord, then at the end of each prayer it said, so please decorate my statements. You please take over. And therefore we know that the acharyas are the mouthpiece of Krishna, because Krishna has taken over. Just like I may say, okay, I'm going to give some Harikatha. That's a total lie. I can't give Harikatha, because what is Harikatha? I can give you information. That's not a lie. I can give you information about Harikatha, but I can't give you Harikatha, because Harikatha means that Hari himself is speaking through the person, and the person is not figuring it out, but Hari himself is coming through him. So Srila Gurudev explained that when Srila Raghunath Das Goswami is speaking Vallabh Kushmanjali, he's not in control. It's just everything's coming into him and then out of him as a waterfall, as a constant flow. So, I forgot why I said that. So we pray that we become recipients of that mercy. And then I know who to speak to and who to say what to. When I first met Gurudev, I thought it was going to be like when I first met Prabhupada. Or the times, whenever I would hear from Prabhupada, one reason that I'm able to remember so many things that Prabhupada said, or so many things that he wrote, but so many experiences that I had with him, is because as soon as I had it, I would immediately run to everybody that day, the next day, the day after it, and tell him, because everyone was so excited, just like now, what did Gurudev just say? So I would repeat everything. So many years later, 20 years later, I was able to remember so many things from my Prabhupada memoirs book. And then what I couldn't remember, sometimes I'd go to folio because all the conversations, so many conversations were recorded. So then I thought, well, great, I'll do that with Gurudev too, when I first met him in 1992. And I was giving classes in ISKCON, so I would give classes telling all the new things that I was learning about Gurudev, learning from Gurudev about Raghunuga Bhakti. And I wasn't realizing what was happening around me, which was that people were becoming enraged with anger. And then some of the devotees who were seeing Gurudev but were much more tactful than me started complaining to me that I was wrecking everything. So then I went to Gurudev and I said, I told him what was happening. I said, how can I have discrimination to know what to say, who to say, to whom to say what to? So Gurudev said, the fact that you're asking this question shows that you have no Raghunuga Bhakti. Because if you had any Raghunuga Bhakti, then your heart would dictate it. It shows that you're inviting Bhakti, and so you're on the mental plane. Your devotional service is on the mental plane. You're on the mental plane, so your mind is tricking you. So therefore, we always pray for that mercy. Sometimes when I was distributing books, and you know, tons of people are coming, say in an airport, then I would just pray to Prabhupada that please direct me to the person who's ready. Because that is a fact that Krishna is sending people from different universes and different planets and different Sukritis and Sanskars, different lives of devotional service, to meet you right then. You're just making yourself available. And then another question that devotees say, another question based on fear, is, well, how can I speak in front of people who are more advanced than me? Or even how can I speak to even new people? Because they may be judging me, or I may say something wrong, you know, and combining billions of syllables to make words and speaking about something that I have no realization of, which means I have no real understanding of it, because I don't even understand that I'm not this body. I don't understand that Krishna is God. Those are the two basic things you could say. But I, as a conditioned soul, have no understanding of it. Any more than if I would hear what a rasgulla was, if I hadn't tasted it, I would know what a rasgulla is. It drips down the side of the mouth. It's the size of a ping pong ball. It feels like a sponge. It tastes like a combination of a potato and honey and an apple. And it explodes in the mouth. How could I possibly understand what a rasgulla is unless I've tasted it? So, since that's my situation, what I'm doing is I'm combining millions of syllables in repetition of what I've heard from self-realized souls and read in your books. So it's natural that in that combination of millions of syllables, I'm going to make some mistakes. So therefore, I'm afraid to speak to people, especially in groups, even if they're brand new, and then what to speak of devotees. Mm-hmm. And then what to speak of devotees who are older than me. So what to do? The first thing, I'll give you an example of Damodar Priya, who's she's from Australia, but she's here now at this festival. And she was studying to be a lawyer at the time. Now she's a lawyer. But this was several years ago. And Gurudev gave her very short notice. He said, I'm going to be calling on you tonight to tell why your Prabhupada came to the West. What message did he have to give? So then he did call on her. There was about 400 or 500 people, most of them a lot older than her in bhakti and in years. And she got up and she said, well, you know, I'm not qualified to speak in front of all of you advanced devotees, but... And then Gurudev said, just start with the pranams to your Gurudev and the Guru Parampara, and that will give you inspiration of what to say. So that's the first thing. Then another thing is, what I used to do when I had to do it, now I don't usually have to do it, but when I was younger and I had to do it, because I was so nervous, especially when there were big sannyasis in the class. Then I would do what I would do when I was distributing books, because I come from a low to middle income family, and I had to distribute books to you know, big fancy people with briefcases and big fancy ties and glamorous ladies. And so the material part of me felt very nervous and scared and insecure and stupidly inferior. So it's just the modes of nature going on. So I would follow the Bhagavad Gita that and Prabhupada's classes that the body is just made of pus, blood, stool, and urine, and the soul is a little infinitesimal sparkling particle of Krishna, and the super soul is sitting next to the soul, and the super soul is also inside the soul. So then I would start picturing that. It's not only that I could do that because I'm an artist, but anybody can picture anything. Just take off all the outer glamour with your mind's eye and see what the body really is. It's just muscles, bones, pus, and blood, just like the scriptures say. And so then I would see that. I would see the class full of that, even the sannyasis. Or I would see them transmigrating. And I would do this also when I was distributing books. I would see, okay, they're in the human life right now. I would remember that exhibit that Bharad Raj and company made, Changing Bodies, where the soul is sometimes in a camel or an aardvark or a mosquito or a demigod, and I just see them in my mind's eye transmigrating. And so I feel myself talking to the soul inside. Also, just by concentrating on what you have to say, then you're no longer conscious of the audience. But still, you want to make eye contact, and still you want to have a rapport with them. So all that comes with prayers and practice. Any other questions or comments?
I just want to mention something about the book distribution. I get one friend, my god brother, he can distribute book to anybody. He can become friend with anybody. Doesn't matter who is. His secret is, he told me, you should be always positive and always try to appreciate what people answer you. Doesn't matter if it's good or if it's bad. I'm Christian. Oh, very good. I'm not a belief in the God. Oh, very good. Very good. And appreciate people. Try to become friends with them and to be very positive. Never say no. This word no should always we say no. And try to ask positive questions and to try to make him positive. So in this way, the people, they become friends with us and they always agree to take the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What's your name?
Thakur Haridas.
Thakur Haridas. When Thakur Haridas was speaking, it reminded me of as he was saying, using positive words to get the person interested. So once Gurudev gave a lecture on what happens if you chant Nama Parad. If you chant Nama Parad, it means you're full of material desires. So if you're full of material desires and Krishna, that name may give you the fulfillment of that desire, and you'll get a lot of money. But then what will happen is that you'll misuse that money for sense gratification, and then you'll go to hell. So if you take away the middle part, by Nama Parad, you'll suffer. So, but Gurudev was talking about money. So we titled that Harikatha lecture, Easy Money by Nama Parad, to make the person read it. So you can word anything. You can word anything in any way, and it's a reality. So even if the person is an atheist or whatever, if he's an atheist, we don't try to spend time with him because to convince him necessarily, but if he's a receptive atheist, and just by quickly saying one thing, you'll be able to convince him at least to take a book. Because a lot of my godbrothers and godsisters were atheists, We all were, actually. And Prabhupada said that even if a person disagrees with the book as they read it, that's still smaranam, one of the nine practices of devotional service. I don't believe in that. I don't like that. But just by reading it in the book, because the book has so much power, they'll get purified. I've had several godbrothers and godsisters tell me that they would fight Prabhupada's book through it and then surrender at the end.
Wow.
Any other questions or?
Mm-hmm. In your experience, what's the best way to, like, if you're giving class to a group of people who are there who are already interested in wanting to hear something about bhakti yoga, what, in your experience, what's the best way to help them understand that they're not this body? Like, just to get them started.
Prabhupada gave so many examples, and Gurudev also gave so many examples. Just like if I ask you, Prabhupada was giving a class in a school to kids, and he said, where's your eye? Here. Okay, and if I ask you, where's your hand? It's here. If I ask you, where's your mouth? It's here. And if I ask, where are you? So many, many, many examples and analogies. Just like if you have a living baby that's born prematurely, sometimes they put it in an incubator. And then the baby grows. But if a baby is born dead, he said, even if you put it in an incubator, it's not going to grow. So there's a difference between the body and the person inside. I can remember when I was 2 years old. Where's that two-year-old body? It's not here anymore. But I'm still here. I'm remembering. I remember when I was 10 years old. Where's the body? But I'm still here. So there's a difference. Very, very simple things. And if you look in folio, if you press, I recommend everybody who doesn't have folio to get folio. It's only
$5.
It used to be $600. And anything you want to know is all there. And similarly, Gurudev also gives many, many, many good examples of how Krishna is, how God is a person, how God is love. Very simple things. If you read in the Secrets of the Undiscovered Self and the Way of Love, there's many simple things that Gurudev and Prabhupada have given. Folio means all the books that Prabhupada wrote is all on a little CD. And when you open it up, you can type in a word, body, you're not that body, Krishna is God. You can type in Sanskrit without diacritics, and it tells you how many times Prabhupada says it, and let's say he said it in 1,000 places, and then it has what it's called a hit list, and then it opens up the whole hit list. He says it here in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and you press that, and it opens up to it. And the more specific you are, the more you find what you want. If you're looking for a verse, then suppose Prabhupada wrote about that verse 15 times. You get all the 15.
That was only on the database.
It's the database.
That's the database.
That's the database.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention about...
Louder?
I just wanted to mention about if somebody said I am atheist.
I'm sorry?
If you are a Buddhist devotee, you're preaching something and somebody told you I am atheist, so you can tell him the story of the greatest atheist. You can ask him, do you know who is the greatest atheist in this universe? And then he probably will not know, and you can tell him it's Hiranyakashipu. Then you can tell story for Hiranyakashipu.
Yeah. Tell him the story of Hiranyakashipu. Depending on the person, you can do anything.
Yeah.
And depending on the circumstance. For example, if you're distributing a book, you don't have time. But if you're at a house program, you have time.
Yeah.
And then by doing, it becomes second nature.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if Krishnapriya had been preaching about Anukulyena Krishnana Silanam and speaking, then it would have automatically come out of the mouth because of so many times saying it.
Mm-hmm.
But she knew it. But Gurudev purposely wanted to shock her to use, sometimes, what is it, the mother teaches the daughter-in-law through the daughter?
Mm-hmm.
So he was teaching us through her,
mm-hmm.
very kindly.
Shamari, if you have to make a presentation on the philosophy without identifying yourself as a Vaishnava, how will you do that? Certain situations like you go to a school or somewhere, you're going to be so orthodox, so can you do that?
The question is, if you're giving a class in a school, how do you present the philosophy without declaring yourself as a Vaishnava? You can declare yourself as a student of this philosophy.
Then,
you can declare yourself as a teacher of this philosophy.
Yeah, but then any book you recommended to use as a guideline for that? Or
what?
What's a good book?
What's the guideline for that? What's your guideline?
Guideline for what?
Presenting the Hinduism, for example, without any fire as a Vaishnava.
I don't understand. You can say that you teach it, you can say that you're studying it, you can say that your teacher comes from India and he's teaching it to you. There's
what
so many ways.
I think he's asking what book can be a guideline for that. What book can you refer to?
Would you
to?
Be a book? Or
why not?
Mahabharata.
The book of what? I don't understand.
Would you be a base? Let's say if you go somewhere and present your philosophy and then you want to tell about Hinduism, but you don't want to identify yourself as a Vaishnava.
Well, the book that's very famous, that's used by atheists as well, it's used by historians, anybody who's studying the Vedas, is Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
In fact, when Prabhupada was beginning, back in the 60s, he would say that one doctor in India was interpreting the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna represents, is symbolic of the doctor, and Arjuna is the patient, and he's actually giving medical advice. And Dr. Radhakrishnan, who was the president of India, he was misinterpreting it that Krishna represents, the five Pandavas represent the senses, and Kurukshetra represents the body. And I forget what Krishna represented, but another impersonalist said that Krishna, when Krishna says, "Become my devotee, worship me," he's speaking not about Krishna himself as a person, but the unborn, undifferentiated within Krishna. So all kinds of people read Bhagavad Gita. So if you want to hone in on one book, that's a good book. Any last one, because it's just about time for bhajans. Is it 4:30? It's 4:30 already.
I don't know.
And Gurudev will be coming soon. I hope it was a little bit helpful in some way.
Definitely. Thank you.
I want to talk to you more.
Okay.
A question relates to your artwork.
Either I have to glorify Krishna and my guru and Guru Parampara, or I have to be absorbed in myself. I have to take my pick. Which one I want. There's no middle ground. The tongue has to be engaged in something. If it's not engaged in glorifying them and sharing, and just doing bhajan, Gurudev gave he was speaking on his Vyasa Puja class in Muwilambar, and he said, if you just do bhajan and you don't preach, then you're selfish.
Wow.
Yes, Abhirampu?
I noticed that your artwork seems to create appreciation for Gurudev's teachings amongst the devotees of other sanghas, such as ISKCON, when they see your artwork. And my question is, how can we create more bridges like that, and how should we present it?
More bridges in general, or more bridges about the artwork?
More, yes, with your artwork, how should it be presented?
You just sell it to them with the descriptions, and with our website, the art website at the bottom of the description, and our website is also at the bottom of these new posters, so that if they go on the art website, they'll have to get Gurudev's glories and links to his other websites. Does that help?
How can you explain, because whenever I do a book table or something and people ask me on the streets, like, why are they crying? I just say because so much love and now there's
they're crying in ecstasy.
It's not material. So
and they're crying in, yeah.
She says, well, like, why does she look so sad? And they're like, she looks like she's suffering. And I'm like, no, she's not suffering, but I want to know what you would say. Like,
well, whatever I say depends on the person.
Oh, yeah?
She's playing hard to get, which she is.
Ideas.
It's a way to increase the love of Krishna by making him work harder. Or you can just say it's tears of happiness.
Yes, I say usually.
And does that answer?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to end here because the Bhajan has to start. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Gurudev, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanandi. Bunch of cover to this to get this in the world of property for my time.
You're going to go over after this?
Is this the Santu or the
Wheel? It's the Santu.
Okay. Was it actually working?
Uh-huh.